Welcome to Running is Bullshit. I'm Amy.
And I'm Stuart, and you're listening to the podcast that loves to hate running. This is episode 132, and we're talking about snacks, insects, diva runners, some absolutely legendary Strava wankery, and a genuine medical condition that I'm not sure if we can make funny.
That's the usual mix, isn't it? It's usually like banter. God, I fucking hate the word banter. You know.
And then horrible racism. Oh.
Either that, yeah. Either something really offensive, or something really terrible that we just sort of awkwardly go, okay, yeah. Now on, let's sing the Patreon song.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing this time once again. I don't think I've got anything in particular to really rant about. I have been bitching and moaning, you know, for the last week or so, but I can't really remember. I think a lot of it is just London Marathon stuff that no one else is interested in because I keep going on about it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. And, you know, the weather's getting warmer, so there will be something to rant about. We'll be able to rant about...
Oh, it's too hot, isn't it? Oh, sorry, no, we'll leave that for next week after we've had 1 week of slightly warm weather.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the last episode instead. Praise for my Aftershocks Charge Me Lady impression. Was very much appreciated. I've been working on that very well.
That was fantastic. That was insane. That came out of nowhere as well.
Oh, yeah.
That is a proper hidden talent.
That is my thing, yeah.
We've also had plenty of post-race snack chat. So Vicky Cousins says, big races not supplying a snack is BS. The Gosport Half Marathon, which is run by Gosport Roadrunners, supplies an excellent bag of a carton of juice and snacks, which is amazing, and everything you want when you finish. If they can do it as a low-cost race, then large races can. Stop being BS races. Exactly. It's always the smaller races where you get like... some proper food actual proper food, you know, you get some soup or something or some nice cake somebody's made, you know.
Yeah, I bet they're not making 5 million quid a year either, are they?
No, you know what, I'm becoming like a proper commie or something. I'm not for profit. I'm all about not for profit now. Yeah. You know, Ridge Runners, not for profit, fantastic, loads of great stuff at the end. You look at the railways in Wales, just been using trains and rails, not for profit, some nice trains, really comfy. Like, I am full on, like, who's the most left-leaning party we've got in this country right now, because it's not fucking Labour. Let's vote them in. I'm not, nationalise everything. Nationalise races, nationalise rail services.
Nationalise races is your new platform.
Yeah.
So I do like the way you're holding up Ridge Runners and Transport for Wales is your two pillars of socialism.
Exactly. Vote for Amy. I will nationalise everything apart from this podcast. Although we could say we're not for profit. We don't spend your Patreon money willy nilly. We put it back into the podcast. We go and do things to talk about.
We put it back in the running community.
We do. We are not for profit either. That's everything for the public, for the many, not the few. Stop now.
Wow, okay, well, you've just missed the elections. Yeah, obviously, we couldn't talk about this because of Purdo recently, so Amy's now coming out hard on a platform.
Yep.
God. Matt Garner has said, I did a 10K race in Glasgow on Sunday. The organisers laid on water, bananas, love corn, whatever that is, and mini bags of Haribo. So some people are still doing it right. Yes, good to hear.
Yes, definitely. I'm not... Okay. Yes, good.
back down.
Yeah, I'm going to calm down a bit. Cheryl Curran said, our club event, the Dunstable Downs Challenge, always has bananas and crisps as a minimum at the finish. Last year, I was manning the 20-mile checkpoint and it was warmer than people expected. Hubby nipped home and grabbed salt tablets, high five tabs, etc. as additional support. We already had crisps, malt loaf and some sweet stuff as well as water and flat Coke. Yes, definitely. I love it. And I love it when like volunteers go the extra mile and like get stuff they know runners will like, or, you know, like the Pegasus events are always really good for that. People baking things, making potatoes and stuff the night before and all that sort of thing. Yeah,
I
love it.
I believe it's She Runs Cardiff, particularly the Pegasus events, have a reputation for not just potatoes at checkpoints, multiple types of roasted salted potatoes. I mean, that's dedication.
Oh, the She Runs Cardiff checkpoints are... the best. Like, I don't know whether they do other races too, but I think they do pretty much every Pegasus event, but they are fantastic. You always get a massive cheer from them all, and they're like genuinely asking like, oh, how's it going, you okay? Not that the other checkpoints are shit, I'm not saying they're shit, they also do that, but just the sheer enthusiasm and attention to detail of She Runs Cardiff. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's no one at London Landmarks popping home just to grab some extra stuff, is there, to help out? At Nick Coffee Run on Instagram says, another fine episode. One which makes me sad, thinking about how London Marathon and UTMB are slowly taking over the world. I dread to think of the dystopian running universe when I'm greeted at an aid station on my local half marathon by a Dacia UTMB salesperson who'll only part with some water if I agree to marketing emails. We cannot let this silent revolution happen. I look forward to seeing how yourselves, along with your Patreon supporters and the Burden Blend tea contingent, can stop this so I can do a local race, get a cheap as fuck medal from the local trophy maker, a wagon wheel from the village happy shopper, as well as a banana and a voucher for the local bowling alley. Shine on to you both! Shine on to you, Nick. Thank you.
I've never seen that as a sign off before. I love that. Might stop putting that in my work emails. Yeah,
it's very us, isn't it?
By the people, for the people.
That's this podcast and Amy's Amy's agenda. This is a very political episode so far. All kinds of fervor going on.
I know. Ivor Hewitt has said, firstly, in regards to Paris Marathon, ha 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 ha, was laughing out loud running to the station this morning.
Probably just like that as well.
Yeah.
Ha 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 ha.
Ha 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 ha. But also, indeed, medical certificates are bullshit. I had to get one last year for a little run through Greece. Formality, I thought, trotted along the month before with my certificate and chatted to the doctor. Was put on an ECG and told, oh, there's an ad. Anomaly. I can never say.
Here we go.
and told. Oh, there's an anomaly. I'm not signing that. And we're not laughing at you. We're laughing at me not being able to say anomaly.
A little bit.
Oh, perfect. There. Perfect. And was referred on. So 3 weeks of stress and worry to have loads of tests and get told by a friendly cardiologist. Yeah, that's nothing to worry about. A lot of elite athletes have that. So, well, it was worth it just to hear that. Obviously, he didn't say I was elite, but I'm taking it.
Basically the same
thing. You've got a genetic mutation, which means that you're actually capable of getting to Olympic standard. I think that's what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah, I still haven't got my medical certificate for Paris. I'll probably get around to it soon. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Let's have a tea update. Ooh. We are partnered with Burden Blend Tea. That means we'll tell you what tea we're drinking. If you like the sound of that tea, you can go to runningisbs.com/tea. Click on those links. Buy some tea if you want. Amy, are you drinking some more matcha?
I am. I'm still on my matcha bullshit. Today, I have banana matcha. It's okay. I'm not really a fan of banana-flavoured things. I wasn't a fan of bananas until probably only about 10 years ago. I used to hate bananas. That was my thing. Like, oh, I don't like bananas. But I don't mind a banana, but banana-flavoured things.
Banana-flavoured things are usually pretty weird, to be fair.
Yeah. But this is okay. It's not awful. You can drink it. If you don't like bananas, yeah, you probably won't like it, but it's absolutely fine. That's what I'll say. It's not the most delicious matcha I've ever tried, but it's not the worst either. It's not a punishment matcha. It's okay. Somewhere in between.
That's good to know.
It's not a reward matcha either. It's not like, oh, let's treat myself to a matcha. It's just your bog standard, you know, your everyday fare. How about you?
I've just finished off my Vicky sponge cake. That's a black tea. It tastes a bit like a Victoria sponge. It's got like a bit of a jamminess, like a creamy vanilla-iness to it as well. It's very good. Just a nice kind of straightforward black tea you can have every day if you want.
Oh, nice.
What have you been up to, Amy?
Well, can I just say firstly, I've been doing some pretty decent mileage. Ooh. I've actually been going out and running.
Hashtag built up my mileage.
I've built it. I'm building it. It's almost built up. So my Strava progress chart is starting to look less like the Patagonia logo. It's starting to like straighten out a bit, which is nice. It's a bit of a dip. I haven't done my long run yet this weekend. So we've got a bit of a dip. So if you look at it tomorrow afternoon, it'll be fine. So yeah, been going out actually running, which is good. Last week I was in Glasgow for work. Never been to Glasgow before. So just like a really flying visit overnight. But I always find, you know, when you visit a city you're not very familiar with, particularly if you've never visited there at all before or don't really know much about, which I don't really know much about Glasgow. Obviously you hear about Edinburgh a lot, but I don't really know much about Glasgow. And you always have that thing, especially if you're a woman who's going to be running alone, of finding out where to run. And it's that thing of somewhere that's maybe a bit nice and scenic, so you're not just running on the street, but also safe, because sometimes those things don't go together. And as a man as well, you know, so you can't get bloody cornered and robbed as a man as well in cities if you're not familiar with where are the areas that are good to go and not good to go. I was staying in the West End of Glasgow, which, again, I know nothing about the city, but from a Google, I think it's the nicer end. I'm not really sure. But whenever I looked at like places to run, because there's a river that goes through the Kelvin or something like that. Yeah, and I could see there was a path, and I could see on Strava heat maps, because everyone's like, oh, use Strava heat maps. But again, if you're running at sort of 5:30, 6 a.m. on your own as a woman, sometimes that's not the best to just go by that. So I could see along, there was like a river with a path going along it right near where I was staying. I was like, oh, that looks good, but also potentially secluded. I don't know what, you know. So I'd Google, and there'd be these lovely images, but then also there'd be all these news stories of people that were attacked down there. So I'm like, okay. It's always so tricky, because of course in a city people are going to get attacked, and you know, the years between those things happening. But then also you see people on message boards like, yeah, I wouldn't go for a run down there if I were you, and all that sort of thing. You just think, well, is it worth it? Is it worth potentially being attacked? I don't know. So in the end, I was on the, I was staying on the Great Western Road, I think it was called that, and it was this very, very straight road. You can see on my Strava map, it's very, very straight. So the first part of my run, sort of running just down this road, because it was very, there was lots of people about, there's lots of people running, it felt very safe, at like 6 a.m, and then as the morning went on a bit, I went a bit into the parks and stuff, when it felt like there were more people out and about, and it felt a bit safer. So yeah, so it was a very nice run. It was a very nice part of the city from what I saw. And they have the biggest bins I've ever seen, like rubbish bins on the side of the road.
That's your takeaway, like, from the whole thing.
They're like three times the size of the bins you'd see anywhere else, I think. They're massive. And I do wonder, maybe they've done that so they have to collect it fewer times. The council doesn't have to empty them. But they are absolutely massive. I've never seen that before, so... So yeah, that was my trip to Glasgow. But yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky trying to find somewhere to run when you're in a different city sometimes.
It's true.
Yes, yes. Anyway, what have you been up to?
I went to Tenerife for a few days. That was quite nice.
Nice.
Basically just went to a water park on one day, absolutely smashed it, basically got in there pretty much first, straight to the biggest one, straight down that, terrifying, but did that one, and just like smashed everything else really quick before most people had got in the park. So that was good. We worked through that nice. Very well. We then had, we went to a bar, had two cocktails, absolutely wasted. I have no idea what happened, but just like, I thought we'd be better than that. Two cocktails, we were ruined for the rest of the night, and I have no idea how, on like pina coladas, and yeah. So that was
dehydration.
I don't know, we were in a water park. We were swallowing a lot of water accidentally.
it's the not best good part, water though, is it?
I forgot actually the best part of the water park is when I came, a lot of the slides had to go on these big like rubber tubes. And there's one of them as we got to the finish bit, instead of just like getting out like a normal person, I just kind of rolled myself out of the back of it. But I didn't realise how far we'd gone because I was going backwards. And the water was about 10 centimetres deep. And so I just rolled out and just landed on my back and like scratched all down my spine.
Jesus.
I could just imagine it, like, because it was quite a rough ground as well, because to give grip to people walking out. And I could just imagine it felt as I got up, but like my whole back would be bleeding. But like, luckily it wasn't quite that level. But the guy just looked at me, you see him thinking like, what a prick. Why the fuck is he? He just rolled out onto his back and just landed solidly like an absolute lump.
Nice. So
that's just how I do things. And then like the next day, we went for a lovely walk in the Branca del Infierno, which is there. Translates as the Hell Ravine, which is actually nice. Quite nice. It's just a massive ravine, and we just kind of walked up. As you got to the end, it was nice and cool because it's like a couple hundred meter cliffs either side, and then there's a little stream at the bottom, so it was nice and cool and green. There was a shitload of frogs. It was just a very nice walk. It's kind of walk, when you do it, you're not allowed to stay at the end for more than 10 minutes because of the potential for rockfall.
Oh my God.
Because of these cliffs are so high, like... There is always, you have to wear helmets. So it looks pretty weird. You're going for a walk with a helmet, especially when you're just on like a normal kind of hillside. But then when you get to the end, they say you're not allowed to be there for more than 10 or 15 minutes because, yeah, the longer you're there, the more likely it is something will come and like smack you in the head. So that was exciting.
A bit of mild peril.
Yeah. So, yeah, just going for a hike with a helmet is that was a whole new thing, but that was really nice. And then we spent the second afternoon just in bed because it was too hot. I was like, I'm on holiday. I want to stay in my room and not do anything else. Thank you.
Nice.
That's the way I do things. I also did the Newport 10K. Got a PB. Hooray.
Hey.
Second PB of the year for me. So very, very pleased with that. Around 42.50, nice. Which is pretty much on plan. what I was aiming for. So that was very nice, and got loads and loads of amazing support from my club CDF runners who were there. Unfortunately, they were there a bit too early, I would say. They were at the 9 kilometer, or just before the 9 kilometer mark. So you like see them, you're like, yeah, loads of support. And then you hit 9K, and then it's like, it's still a fucking long way to go. I'm still trying to finish off a 10K. I needed them like 500 meters to go. Mm. Over a kilometer out, that was too far. But, you know, the support was amazing. Once I finished, had to walk a very circuitous route to get all the way back to them. And then we waited there and stayed all the way to our last marathon runner, who came in about 5 hours. So, yeah, the people are out there for 5-6 hours altogether, giving support to everyone. Really, nice. Really good day. Really enjoyed that. We did spot David Irwin. Listener who came, and he ran past. I think I did spot him because it said Dr. David on his vest, and then he spotted me, stopped his run. He was doing the marathon, stopped, ran all the way back, came to stroke William, gave him a quick stroke, and then ran off again. So good for him. Nice. He's clearly not fussed about his time. He's just like, yeah, it's fine, I'll just go and have a quick stroke.
Also dangerous to run with Doctor on your vest at a marathon.
Just in case. Yeah.
Because if somebody hits the deck, if you're on that PB, you just want to carry on, don't you?
But I suppose your hippopotamus oath kicks in at that point, doesn't it? So you're probably, if you're a doctor, you're probably the kind of person who doesn't mind helping people, probably.
Well, yeah. Only if you've got a vest on that says doctor on it. Yeah. Otherwise, just keep.
Oh no! Is there anyone else?
Oh no! I can't see. You can't see them.
Oh, you've got basic first aid. Yeah, that'll. Good for you. Yeah. Thanks.
Everyone knows CPR nowadays.
Yeah.
Fine. Be fine.
Also spotted Tony Howells. I think doing the marathon as well. So did manage to spot a couple of people. So, well done to everyone who was there. I also did a mile race like 2 days later. Well, 2 days later, there was a fell race, which I love doing, but I couldn't do this year because it was just too close. The day after was a mile race. Absolutely love that, as I always do. And it was one of those ones that, like, mile races are always really, really hard if you, because you run them hard. But this one felt hard, but it also felt really fast. So while it was an okay time, it was 5:57, which is a good time for me, but it felt faster. I felt like I must be like close to my PB, but I just wasn't. And so that was slightly annoying. But yeah, happy to do it. Always happy to do a mile race. But I think that's the only one I can do this year because the other ones have been cancelled later in the year. So that's a bit of a shame.
I've done a mile race once, never again.
Doesn't seem like your bag.
Ugh, I thought I was going
to push yourself. Well, yeah, exactly. Like for me, that's a good thing. Like to get over the line, like dry heaving is the way you're supposed to do it. But I can imagine for you, it gets a little uncomfortable. You're like, nope.
Yep, backing that off. That's not why I do this. It's not why I do this.
Oh, actually, I have got a thing that actually relates to what we're talking about at the Newport Marathon and just kind of generally a thing about running. You know, obviously, this is very much highlighted with the London Marathon recently because everyone watches that on TV. You know, when you see someone that is absolutely hanging out of their ass, like they are dehydrated, they are delirious, they're all over the place, they can barely control their legs. When you think of the runner, it's always a man, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a woman in a marathon or any other race, you know, in that condition. Is it
not coming over the line? I've seen like an equal amount of women that faint or whatever, you know, earlier on in the race because they're having some sort of medical episode, but not sort of pushing themselves so much that they're like struggling over the line. Either you're having a medical episode and you're done, or
if they go down, they go down, or they stop. I think men they get to that point and they go, oh, I'm feeling a bit bad, I'll just go a little quicker to try and get it over with. And it just I don't really fancy any water. Even my mouth is dry like sand, but And for some reason, it's only men that I've seen that get into that condition. I'm sure there have been women, of course. Well, but is it just that thing again of women just look after themselves better and are more sensible?
Well, this actually, I forgot to mention that I've been listening, and you can read it, a really, really good book. And it talks a bit about this and talks about some studies that have been done that basically show, as we can probably guess, that women pace races a lot better, and that's why they tend to do better at ultras and longer distances, because they just pace it better. They don't go out so confident. It's called In Her Nature: How Women Break Boundaries in the Great Outdoors, and it's by Rachel Hewitt. And it's a really, really, I'm listening to it on Spotify. It's a really good listen, really, really good read. But it talks a lot about the history of women in the great outdoors, as it suggests, a lot about hiking, but also running, because the author is, she starts talking about it through the lens of running, actually, because she starts running. It talks about the differences between men and women as well, and how men and women approach races, etc. So yeah, there has been studies around this that show that men are just shit at pacing, usually because of overconfidence.
Yeah.
And women are better at pacing because they are less confident about these things. But yeah, definitely recommend this. I mean, really, I'm not quite finished. I've got like a chapter or two left, but it's very, very good. Very good.
Yeah, it seems a lot of people, they get to a point where it's like, they're incredibly dehydrated, it's going very badly, and they don't make the decision to stop. I mean, I guess when you get to that point as well, you are kind of delirious and your decision making is bad. But like, to getting yourself to that point is already kind of not quite a failure in itself, but it's a, you know, it's something has gone wrong already and you haven't made the right decisions up to that point, and then it just gets worse and worse. But I just think it's really interesting. We saw a few people coming past who looked, they weren't quite that bad, because I like to think we would have kind of helped, but you could see people starting to get quite bad. And that's what I quite like about like marathon supporting. When you see especially when you see people running past, you can look at them, you go, yeah, his feet have gone, or you can be like, that's calves, or hip tension there. And you could just, because you know, it's only a kilometer to go, so it's pretty, you know, almost towards the end, and you can just like, you can see where the pain is in the people. You feel really bad for them.
I think this is why ultra marathons, or even I guess trail marathons, are good, because they sort of teach you where that limit is. Because if you get to that stage sort of halfway through an ultra, you're like, I'm tapping out, you know, I've had a nice day, but I'm tapping out, sort of thing. You haven't got to think, oh well, I've only got 1K to go, so let's really push myself. It's like, no, I've got a long way to go. This is how I feel. I know I need to tap out. Because like, when I've told people about doing, you know, DNF in the Edom, and I was like, oh yeah, I had like 8 miles or something to go. Maybe, oh, what was it, eight? It was like nine or something. I can't remember what I was at. Or it was 11. It was something like, it, you know, a lot of people, if you've run 39 miles and you only got 11 more to go, a lot of people would think, well, why can't you just struggle through that?
Only 11.
Like, only 11, because comparatively compared to the 39 you've just run. But it's just, you know, don't you? You know when it's time.
It's not worth it.
To stop, and it's not worth damaging your body. And I think that's a good thing that the ultras teaches you, as opposed to road running, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure many people DNF marathons unless they absolutely have to.
I
don't think many people get to a checkpoint and just go, nah, not worth it today. I think they'll walk it, have some nice food yeah, they'll just walk it and like, yeah, absolutely death march it to the end. But not many people, I don't think, seem to DNF marathons for that reason.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's get on to the exciting, potentially not very funny part of this episode. this is all you, Amy. Take it away.
Oh yeah. So a bit. This is Amy's medical update. So I mentioned like a few months ago that I've dropped out of the slam. I'm not dropped out. I've sort of deferred the slam this year. I think I've talked about this a bit on the podcast. Like Reese Jenkins, who is the race director for Pegasus, was really great and was happy for me to defer it. So that's really, really good. But I haven't really explained why I've deferred that. It is not just me being lazy. And this is the thing, I often get, because of this, what I'm going to talk about, I often get characterized as being flaky and lazy, and I fucking hate it.
I feel like you're looking me in the eye when you're saying this.
But it would like really get in my head, like, I am just this flaky, lazy person that can't commit to things, blah, 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 all that sort of thing. So basically, last month or so, I was diagnosed with PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Which is basically a very severe form of PMS. So lots of people have heard about PMS, and this is like PMS on steroids. And just the facts of it, this is something that occurs during the luteal phase of your menstrual cycle. So this is the time between when you ovulate and when your period starts. And this phase lasts about 2 weeks. On average, for some people, it can be longer or shorter. And during this stage, PMDD can cause the physical symptoms that you might expect and you might know about, usual for PMS, the sort of fatigue, things like that. But also quite severe mental ones, which is what I get. So like really, really severe depression, anxiety, like quite obsessive thoughts and paranoia. I remember once I had like this really bad paranoia that somebody was going to break into my flat. It's when I lived on my own, it was years ago. I had this thing, and for like a good few nights, I couldn't sleep properly because I was convinced somebody was going to come into my flat, like break into my flat. No, and there was no like rationale behind that. But I just like had this fixation on it for just a few nights. And sometimes I get it about other things now. So yeah, so for me, like, it causes really bad mental symptoms for about a week out of every month, which sucks. So like, I only usually feel good and normal for like 3 weeks out of every four. And then for a week, I just get really, like I said, really severe depression. And the thing is, it's really hard to, for a lot of women, like, it's difficult to get it diagnosed because you feel like this for a week, and then you feel absolutely fine. So you sort of forget about it. And during that week, you don't want to ring the doctor and deal with it all because you feel so shit. And then you come out of it and think, oh, well, maybe it was just something else. And then the cycle sort of repeats itself. Not to mention sort of anything to do with sort of cycles and periods. Like, you know, some doctors would be like, well, just get on with it. That's what you just got to accept and get on with it. You know, just being a woman, isn't it? And as a lot of women will know, no, it absolutely sucks. Like, even PMS sucks. But like I said, this is like PMS on steroids. I also get things like very extreme fatigue, like really extreme fatigue, and a real lack of motivation of not being, can't be asked to do things, like really, really bad. So obviously that interrupts my training constantly. So for about a week out of every month, sometimes I wasn't running at all. And then once you get out of a routine, it's quite difficult to pick it back up again. And not to mention, it's not just a case of, okay, so every week out of four, one week out of four, I'm sort of not really training much. It's, I'm not really doing anything else much in my life, and I'm like cancelling on people and all that. So it's like that mental thing of, okay, so not only do I have to pick up my routine with running again and my training, it's also a case of I feel really shit because I've had to cancel on someone, or I've got a load of work to do because I've put off a load of work that week, and now I've got to catch up on it this week, so I have less time to run because I'm having to catch up on this work I've missed, and da, da, da. So it's like not just the running bit, it's like the other aspects of your life that then make it difficult to run as well. So yeah, so I've been struggling. I've always had this. I've actually been on antidepressants before it was diagnosed, which, I mean, antidepressants work for some people, but I really struggle with antidepressants. They make me feel worse in some ways. Also, sometimes they prescribe birth control, which, again, like for me, hormones. So when I spoke to the doctor about it, and I actually ended up having to go private because you just can't get a doctor's appointment now anyway, but also to see a specialist about this and the referral process and all that. I ended up just paying for a private consultation with a specialist women's clinic to talk to somebody who was like a real expert in it. And I got an appointment within a week, you know. But she was saying basically some women are very sensitive to synthetic forms of progesterone, which is what I am. So going on any form of progesterone-based birth control to try and sort of what's the word, like control your cycle so you're not getting the peaks and troughs and stuff, actually made me feel worse. Actually, like, would make me feel the same but feel shit all the time. So there was consistency, but it was consistently shit. There was no like, oh, I'm happy again now for 3 weeks. It was like, no, you're gonna feel shit the whole time. So she explained that basically some women are sensitive to this very synthetic form of progesterone. So in terms of treatment, like, there's HRT, hormone replacement treatments, which I'm a bit reluctant to try because they're quite complicated, because like I said, I can't just take a hormonal birth control because that doesn't work for me. It works for some women, but not for me. So what I'm trying at the moment, which actually is helping quite a bit, firstly is supplements, which I probably should have been taking already. And these were recommended by the doctor, but also I did a load of reading on it, and a lot of people online have talked about how some of these supplements have changed their life, and there is some scientific evidence to back it up. It's not a lot of scientific evidence, like a lot of supplements, but there is like a fair bit. The first one is magnesium, absolutely fucking amazing. I don't know, like, I feel like people should probably take magnesium anyway, but the doctor said try magnesium, really, really good. Even without the PMDD side of things, I'm sleeping so much better in general on magnesium. I find it really good.
I've seen like Instagram adverts and like gym bros talking about magnesium, but that is actually a thing though.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I would say maybe it's placebo, but I don't think it is, because I had my doubts about it, and I wasn't really, I thought, oh, I'll try it, and I wasn't really like thinking convinced by it, but I have definitely noticed a difference taking, well, I'm taking it, so I'm taking magnesium, I'm also taking a vitamin D, like a spray thing for energy, and also vitamin B complex, which is all your vitamin D, Bs, that was the other thing she recommended, was like a vitamin B complex. But I think the biggest thing for me was the magnesium. Like, it's absolutely fantastic. So yeah, I don't know, I didn't tell my ashwagandha story, did I? I did try a bit of ashwagandha as well, which again,
suspicious.
Magnesium, I looked it up, and there is a fair bit of, there's a few academic articles over the past sort of 5 years that have looked at the use of magnesium in women with PMDD, and it shows that it does help. So there is like a growing scientific evidence base around magnesium and PMDD. But I was also recommended ashwagandha.
It sounds like something you smoke in a pipe.
yeah, basically. Which I think it's like an Indian, I think it's found in India, maybe that's wrong, somewhere like that. There's not as much evidence around ashwagandha, but again, you'll see a lot of gym bros talking about it, which is funny, because I think they're basing their evidence on things that are quite dubious, because it says it sort of boosts testosterone, but most of the time, unless you're actually taking testosterone, your body will even itself out with those sorts of things. So I don't know. But yeah, so I did try ashwagandha, and my mum actually ordered me some online. And it came to the house, and I didn't even read the label properly. I took some as soon as it arrived, which was like 3 p.m. And then the next day, I thought, I'm going to, because you either take it in the morning or the evening, I thought, oh, I'm going to start taking it in the morning, because it's meant to, so I should explain, ashwagandha is meant to control cortisol levels, or, you know, lower cortisol levels, to make you a bit calmer and less stressed and less anxious. So I thought, oh, I'm going to start taking it in the morning, because I could probably do with lower cortisol levels throughout the day. So the next morning, I took another one, and I started to feel really odd, like really weird, like really strange, like really just out of it. And I went to sleep that night, and the fire alarm went off and woke me up, and I woke up and I was shaking like a shitting dog. I don't normally, our fire alarms go off all the time, and I'm not normally like that, but Freya was like, oh, it's probably just adrenaline, you know. So I went back to sleep. The next day I wake up, my teeth are chattering, I just feel really out of it, really weird. I had a meeting with my line manager that day, because I was talking about like this new diagnosis, and that I might need like reasonable adjustments and stuff. And I was saying to her, I was like, yeah, I feel really weird today, you know. Like,
might have helped you out a little bit.
A bit, yeah.
They would have gone, yeah, she is mental. Yeah, she needs some help.
Because I'd just been off work sick. Because, you know, sometimes it's so severe that I go off work. It's not every month, but sometimes my PMDD means I have to have like a couple of days off work, or working from home at least. So, you know, I was on the like this video call to my manager going, yeah, I still feel weird today, even though I'm back at work. And so I remember after this video call, I went to sit in the lounge again, and Freya was looking at the packet, because she was saying, are you sure it's not the ashwagandha? I'm like, I don't think so. And she's like, how much are you supposed to take, the milligrams or micrograms or whatever, you know, the MG? And I said, well, online, they say start at about 250 and then probably about 500 MG, but no more than 1,000. There were 3,000 MG in these tablets. 3,000. And I'd taken, and they have a half-life of 24 hours, I think. So I'd taken one at 3 p.m. and one at like 7 a.m. the next morning. I got like 6,000 milligrams of ashwagandha.
So you were off your tits.
Yeah. I had 6,000 milligrams in my system.
So you got a drug you didn't really understand from the internet, didn't look at the instructions, and just started necking them.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and
it's your history as a party girl, isn't it? That's the problem.
I know. I was off my head on ashwagandha, so I haven't touched. Yeah, 6,000.
I'm not sure if this is incriminating or not. I might have to check the legality of this podcast.
Yeah. But going back to what I was talking about, which is that hasn't. I haven't touched it since. It is, so for some people it works, but I haven't touched it since because it made me feel so awful. But magnesium and like the vitamin B stuff. But I think mainly the magnesium is really, really helping. And then the other thing is therapy. So although this is like a hormonal thing, anything that you already have, so sort of anxieties, worries, issues, they're just really, what's the word, like magnified by this. So having therapy to work through issues and other things can really help in terms of lowering like your depression levels during those times. That's what I'm trying at the moment, is just supplements and therapy, basically, with the hope that I have to avoid HRT, because that's like really complicated. You basically, there's one option where there's loads of these different options and they're all equally complicated, but there's one option where they sort of give you an injection to stop your hormone cycle completely and then give you hormones to replace your old hormone cycle, and it's all really like really complicated.
Feels like you have to be on that forever as well, probably.
Yeah, and also they all have some form of like negative side effects. So when she was going through the options, she's like, oh, you can do this, but also it can cause cancer, and I'm like, oh great. So so I'm trying, because the thing is, someone, we get a hysterectomy, but the thing is that causes its own issues, because those hormones are help, that hormonal cycle is helping you as well. It has lots of, it's meant to be there, isn't it? So that's what I'm trying at the moment. I'm just trying supplements and therapy and seeing if that helps a bit. But yeah, it's been like really tricky with running, with something that's meant to be quite consistent. And also the other thing I'm doing is like looking at my calendar. And if I know I'm going to be in like PMDD territory, trying not to book races during that time, which can be a bit of a shitty thing, but, or at least training runs. Like if somebody wants to go on like a run with me, I'll be like, I can't do these days because I probably will cancel. Like I probably will. And I now, you know, I now at least having this diagnosis, I can say, okay, so this is what I have. I'm not flaky. It's just that, and I can let people know in advance, we can schedule something, but there's a chance I might cancel. And if you're okay with that, then that's fine. But yeah, I mean, even like this month, so I've been taking these supplements now for sort of 2 months. And even this month, I've been a lot more consistent in my training than I was before. So I think it is starting to help as well. So yeah, that's it. That's Amy's medical update.
But it's really good that you've talked about that, because I know, I imagine PMS probably affects most women. PMDD, yeah. I was just having a quick look about this, because I think as soon as you said it to me, I was like, right, straight on Google to find out a bit more. I think it's maybe 5 to 8% of women are affected by it.
Yeah, it's, and it's possibly probably more just not diagnosed, yeah.
Yeah, and possibly, you know, people that don't know about it or don't know it's a thing. They're just, again, like you've said, they've just kind of been told to go on with it. Because everyone says, you know, if everyone's saying they have pain or they have anxiety or they have this, you'd think, oh, well, this is normal. This is what everyone is having. So it is useful for that to know that, you know, there is kind of a further diagnosis to that, which is really useful. And again, it's just a useful thing to be able to talk about and to know about, because I think maybe 2 years ago, I don't think I know what luteal meant. I don't think I'd ever heard the word in my life.
Which me neither, I know. And I'm a woman.
Well, that's the thing I've kind of realised as well. A lot of women don't really know what's going on, because they have never been told and they've never really thought to look into it. But a lot of men, probably most men, don't know a huge amount about it. I think I've learned quite a bit about it in the last few years, so this is really useful for me as well. Because again, you know, if you're not in a relationship with a woman, you at least have work colleagues, you have friends, all these people that you know, people in your family, are all going through it in some way or another. So it's useful to know about it. Again, it's a bit like, it's, I think probably where we are now is kind of like where menopause was 5-10 years ago. I think because that has kind of become a huge thing now, hasn't it? Like it's, you know, at workplaces have always got lots about it. There's lots of information about it now and it's a lot more open. And I think this is possibly the same kind of thing. Like I've seen lots of things. People like Ailish McColgan has written a lot about it and been fantastic talking about it. And I've just seen an advert as well from Jasmine Sawyers, the long jumper, who's done a really good advert about how even if the period isn't affecting your competition directly, the worry of it still does. So there's even, when that comes around, just the worry that something is going to go wrong is still an issue in itself. And there's kind of nothing you can do about it, and no one that will understand. So it's becoming a lot more of an out there issue, which is good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, if you go on any trail running group for women, like on Facebook or whatever, and you just put in periods, there'll be so many posts that come up with women that are like, oh, I'm going to be on my period during this race. And like, it's so tricky to navigate in general. And I think for me, with the PMDD stuff, I think the difference is if, between like PMS and PMDD, if you feel a bit anxious, if you feel a bit depressed before in your like luteal phase, that's quite normal. But if you're still able to get on with the things that help you feel better, like going for a run, like you might be feeling depressed or anxious, but you can go for a run and you feel a lot better or whatever that might be, then that's probably PMS, and that absolutely sucks. But if you feel like you can't do those things, that like you really can't, then it's probably verging into PMDD territory. Like every month you can't, and don't think that's like I used to think, a personal failure, and that you're weak, and that you know, there is a, and the thing is that the worst thing is, because of how your brain's thinking during that time, you will blame yourself and think, why can't I just do this? You know, this is me, I'm just being lazy, blah, 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 blah. But you know that if there wasn't something going on, you would be able to do those things, you know? Mm. So if it's at the point where every month you're having to miss loads of running, stuff that would normally make you feel better, and you can't just push through, because I know that outside of PMDD, like we all do, I have moments of stress, anxiety, and I can still just about function in everyday life. I can still push through it. And I know the difference between when I can't be asked and when I can't do something. So I think that's worth knowing and recognizing as well, that if you feel like you really can't do something, then there's probably a deeper meaning. It's not just a personal failure, you know?
Yeah, and I'm sure there's lots of people listening to this that have had very similar things, so obviously we do want to hear about that. If you can make it, you know, reasonably entertaining, that'd be great.
Put a joke in there somewhere.
Yeah, just slip a gag in, that'd be great. Yeah. But yeah, we would appreciate any other messages on that. That's always interesting for us to read, even if, you know, it might not make the podcast if we do get a lot, but we do definitely read them all, and we, you know, always definitely appreciate it.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that's me. That's my medical update.
Right. So, as we said at the beginning, there's that. Now let's do some shit singing.
Yeah.
If you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/runningisbullshit, and you can give us money every month. And here are all the people that have done that this month.
Dina J. Howells, Amanda Murray, Hyde, Liz Reese, Sherry Kinnison, J. Martin Kaplan, Dewey Larry Warren, Ian Thompson, Rachel Bentley, Len Martin, Bernadette McCarthy, Nikki Jones, Andy Robbins, Stuart Stevens, H.B. Brian Simpson. Mark Willis, David Irwin, Ian Hales, Francis Howell, Rich Scum, Paul Hibbert, Matt Jones, Spencer Aldred, Jenny Tamasebi, Kat Dave, Gail Hartman, Elizabeth Chaban. Gail CEO. Victoria Magnus, Maria Weeks, Erin Shaw, Sophie Jakes, Judy Page, Taryn Milligan, Matt H, Andrea Lauren, Daniel Braun, Martin Jowsey, Dawn Shepherd, Kel Ryder, Matt Caffin, Tom Alcox, Cara Evans, Victoria Dick, Penny Simpson, Debbie Hurley, David Yellow Mag Teetle, Matt Barrows, Andy Nichols, Angela Foster Swales, Jason Spinks, Ruth KP, Matt Lee Shambolic Adult, Lee Wood, Nikki Genders, Alice Newstead, Sherry Grubbs, Jonathan Carter, Noms Dawson, Graham Hackland, Karen Hamilton, Sandra Heinzer, Clark Gilmore, Karen Blay, James Lampert, Elliot Line, Drew Edwards, Matt Garner, Sophie Nichols, Lisa Gibbon, oh, Neil Denton, Catherine Brown, Victoria Cousins, Matt Newbury, Kath Everett, Raymond Quinn, Steve Robson, Carl Fleming, Vicky Robbins, Charlie Neverson, Cheryl Current, Tony Howells, Adam Baker, Catherine Fenton, Matt Jezioski, Claire Davis, Gabby Thomas Nair, Anthony Howe, Gregory C. A. P.
Don't forget to get in touch with your running bullshit on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just search Running is BS and let us know why you particularly hate running this week.
Helen Cullimore is first up, and she said, following on from your episode 130, bragging about things you haven't done yet is BS. All I'm finding is my Facebook feed is All I'm finding is that my Facebook feed is full of people bragging that they've entered the London Marathon ballot for next year. Currently, this year's race hasn't started. And let's face it, it's just a ballot. No guarantee of entry, nothing to brag about. No, I haven't entered the ballot. No interest in running London Marathon, so I won't be entering. Good for you, Helen. Yeah, and there's been a lot made this year, and everyone is going on about the fact there are 870,000 ballot entries. I'm like, is that a good thing?
No.
I don't know.
No, because I've seen so many people on social media, like, oh, just applied on a whim. I've never run before. I just want to do the London Marathon. I'm just thinking, yeah, but there's people that, I know a lot of people hate on the London Marathon, but there are runners that are going to train for that do actually want to do it. I'm not saying that in an elitist, because I know it's sparked all these elitist posts, like you must be able to run an 8-minute mile in order to run the London Marathon. Yeah. I don't mean like that. I mean any speed of runner who actually wants to train and do it, you know, not just like, oh, I'm doing this on a whim because I saw it on the TV.
Yeah, I feel mostly the London Marathon in most people's minds is kind of a novelty event. Mm. It's like a one-off silly thing that you do once and then have no interest in.
Yeah.
And I just think that's a bit of a shame for, you know, the people who are putting in the effort for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And never get the opportunity.
Yeah, and like I say, it's not about running faster and being a real runner in that sense. I mean somebody who's actually like bothered about it and wants to run, not like, oh god, I can't believe it, I just did it on a whim, like, just,
yeah, well, you know, off. Someone that spent 5 years getting their PB from 6.5 to 5 hours or something like that, it's not an interesting story. No. You know, that's going to be on the news, but I think that's a much more relatable, interesting story personally.
Yeah, anyway, fuck it.
You're in the ballot, aren't you?
I am in the ballot, but because I actually fucking run. If I get in,
Did you put that on the form?
Yeah, I actually fucking run, so let me in. You know, like if
three
I get
out of four
in,
weeks.
I will. Maybe I'll train for it. But I already run, so I will be able to run it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, don't.
You're saying it's easy, and other people shouldn't bother.
I'm saying, like, don't just enter it and be like, oh, I'm just doing this for a win. What a joke! Like, you're taking up the ballot entry for people who actually are interested in doing it. You know?
You're making me feel worse about this Paris Marathon thing now, but we'll come to that.
Fiona says, hello to you both. Amy, keep posting the gorgeous pictures from your runs, and Stuart, keep posting pictures of incredible cocktails whilst on holiday.
Oh yeah, not for a while. I can't handle my cocktails apparently.
She says, I'm currently entertaining myself with the new sportsshoes.com catalogue. Oh, is this the physical copy that they always seem to send that I just throw straight in the bin? Like,
yeah, I'm impressed someone's had a look at it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was an option.
No, we go. We've got like a little, because I live in flats, we've got like a little junk mail box that's right next to where we collect our posts, and it just goes straight into that. So, yeah. And the amazing, the new sportsshoes.com catalogue and the amazing marketing bullshit that companies are coming up with. Here are my three favourites. Apparently, Salomon are now democratising speed with the S-Lab Spectre, which will bring high-performance running for the everyday athlete. Guess I don't need to worry about training. I just need these shoes. It's like, that's an oxymoron. Democratizing speed. What does that fucking mean, man?
Everyone can have it.
Everyone can run fast. That's not true, though. Is everyone can
and
run
also,
fast.
Everyone can have it. What? Oh, are they free, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this more socialism? Shoes. Socialist shoes. Shoes for everyone.
Shoes and speed for the people.
Not for the few.
Not for profit speed. She also says the Nike Invincible 3 has a super cush softness in all the areas that touch your foot, so you can enjoy every step. I mean,
isn't that most of the shoe?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, all the areas that touch your foot, the shoe, though.
What, the inside of the shoes. Yeah. They've made the inside of the shoe comfortable.
Yeah.
That was a good idea.
And finally, the CloudTech technology in On shoes is Swiss engineered that will make every step feel effortless. Isn't that what people say about watches, Swiss engineered?
Yeah, I think they're just trying to use Swiss engineered as a thing to say, look, oh, that must be good. They're Swiss, must be good. But every step feels effortless. What, so your legs don't, you don't have to put any effort in your legs or your arms or your lungs. The shoes are so well engineered that it's no effort whatsoever.
And it's Swiss engineered, so you can, like, a smaller shoe comes out that's for, you know, walking and something else, and then also a little knife with a little serrated edge.
Oh, you're doing a Swiss pen knife joke there.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, yeah, that was a good one. Yeah. Well done.
She says, right, best get back to work now. Yeah, You're wasting your time reading the sports shoes catalogue. We're supposed to be working. Just keep up with the excellent work. Thank you.
I do worry about the amount of potential jobs we're ruining.
I know.
The messages that we've had recently. I know. People are risking it.
At least Fiona's like in work. Like she is at work. She's not sat in her car about to miss a meeting. So
that's true, yeah. Read another email. Hi, Amy and Stuart. I'm writing this as I stopped during a run because I almost swallowed a bee. So, yeah, that's what's bullshit this week. Nearly swallowing bugs and having to spit them out. I don't know how the bee managed to fly directly at my mouth. Serves me right for not breathing through my nose. Much love, Gareth Barker. And I just love, first thought, like you've got, puh! Let me get my phone out. Dear Amy, straight away.
I love that, yeah, we're the first people you think of when you nearly...
I'm glad, I'm so glad.
Yeah, love it. I've had an email from Claire Allison about homophobic colleagues now packers, but she also's got a good biscuit story. So she says, I was once roped into making edible medals for our running club race. We spent hours baking these bloody biscuits, including vegan and gluten-free versions. She says, I was stood for so long that I then needed an osteopath treatment. Is that true? Like, gosh. A lot of the runners were up in arms and took to Facebook to moan about the biscuit medals and how cheated they felt and how they'd never have entered if they knew.
Oh, my God. Imagine.
A lot of them didn't even wait to get home before slagging us slash the biscuits off and did so in front of us. Not something I want to repeat. That's terrible. That's terrible. Two things there. Firstly, those runners are absolute dicks. Like, who slags things off right in front of people? Like, even if you didn't make those biscuits yourself, it's really fucking rude, isn't it, to be like slagging it off. Secondly, yeah, the race organizers probably should have made clear that you're getting biscuit medals, because people are very, as we can see,
probably
people are very
did.
Precious about medals, aren't they? Like, you do usually yeah. find that a lot of races I enter will say, oh, you get like a wooden medal, or you get a nice slate medal, or whatever it might be. So yeah, that's terrible. Those runners are dicks, man.
I do not believe, if even if it had really clearly on this when you entered, you will not receive a medal, you will receive a biscuit. I don't think anyone would have gone, nah, not going to do it.
No.
I am not going to do that race because they're going to give me a biscuit instead of some medal.
Yeah.
That I have no purpose for.
People are so precious about these things. It's so rude. Jeez. Especially if it's like a club race. Like if you ran London Marathon and they gave you a biscuit, maybe. But like, you know, again,
well, London
for
Marathon
the people.
Don't even do that.
Biscuit medals made by the people for the people. Let's feed the people with our biscuit medals. Not for profit.
Okay. And I saw on Twitter, this runner put in the hard work, finally, as someone should, to discover the first Boston finisher to not use carbon plates. Mm-hmm. At Bowtied Running says, I present to you the winner of the Non-Mechanical Advantage 2024 Boston Marathon, Joshua Tyser, bib 3583. Josh ran 2:34:39 at this year's Boston Marathon, wearing Hoka Arahi 7s, coming in $145. This placed him 225th overall, but first in our new division. This daily trainer contains only EVA in the midsole with no plate. Congrats to Josh. I did enjoy this because I thought this is a really pissy piece of work someone's done. They've looked through 225 photos of runners to determine. But his next tweet did actually just kind of clarify this was done out of interest and not like some kind of rallying cry against carbon plates, which is a shame because that would have been much funnier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carbon plates are bullshit.
But I'd love the amount of effort that's gone into finding out this. But yeah, it was just kind of that's interesting.
Yes.
But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Though the front 224 all were wearing them.
Yeah, that is a massive amount. That's insane. Absolutely insane. But they do work. They do make you faster, you know? Yeah.
Or at the very least, it's faster runners and they all think they have to wear them. And even if it isn't making them faster, the faster runners feel like they have to wear them or they're going to get left behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh, cheat shoes. Oh, Druitt says, the other day on my trail run, I didn't bleed. Then in the shower post-run, I nicked myself shaving. Hashtag, there will be blood.
The trail gods will have their blood one way or the other.
Yeah, some final destination
the
shit
sacrifice
there.
Sacrifice is
will,
necessary.
Yeah, they will come get you. No one runs for free.
And Gabby Nair. She said, if I, as a diva runner, was to design the perfect road marathon, there would be some learning applied from having done ultras. There would be something other than just gels en route, and there would be a bit of food at the end. The best I've ever seen was at the finish of the Munich Marathon. That finished in the Olympic Stadium, and the football pitch was given over to free food stalls just for the runners. No goodie bags, but you went to whatever type of food took your fancy and just ate it.
That's amazing.
There was cake, there were sandwiches, nothing massive, just a few varied bits and pieces. And then you went and found your people who were in the seats. Nutritionally, you needed a better balance of food, never mind any food at all. If a marathon supplies anything, it is usually sweet stuff, Lucozade gels, etc. Spectators are often super generous and offer jelly babies. What might stop some people from cramping, though, is some salty food. I, for one, can't see a jelly baby after 20 miles without contemplating some quality dry retching because of sugar overload. So at the end, at least, offer something sweet to pick people up and offer something salty. Yes, 100%. Absolutely, we agree with that, yep. Gabby. Always think that's necessary.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Kat Abigail Hardman also replied to agree with her and said a salt lick station would be handy, although there's probably reasonable concerns to be raised around the sharing of a salt lick. Okay, forget that idea.
Ooh, gross.
In theory, I see where you're coming from, but no.
Communal
no, please
salt
don't.
Lick. And then maybe one of those things that budgies eat as well. What are those, like a cuttlefish or whatever they are? Like a budgies eat?
A little cuttlefish, yeah. You have just a little nibble on that to sharpen your teeth up.
One of those hamster bottles. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this.
This is how we should be treating runners.
Yeah, yeah. Like the vermin they are.
Okay. But it's true, it's surprising how many places forget about salty stuff and savoury stuff.
Oh God, yeah. Especially, you know, when you run ultras, and like I said, a lot of aid stations will have the salty stuff on there. They're well aware of that, most races, but... Yeah, you get tired of the sweet stuff, you get tired of the sugar, it can upset your stomach, like, yeah, it's not good. It's the bullshit running news! Okay, so our main story, that sounds like I'm presenting BBC News, but our main story this week has been all over social media, and it's about an influencer who has sparked backlash after running the Brooklyn Half Marathon without registering. You've probably seen this all over your sort of Facebook, Instagram, whatever. Shortly after completing the half marathon, Alexa Curtis took to X, Twitter, to write about her experience and exactly how she was able to follow along with the race without being formally entered. So she says, I just ran 13.1 miles for the Brooklyn Half Marathon at a 7.43 minute pace. I didn't walk all, I cried a lot during it, I went to bed at 10 p.m, her post began. And she's just, the post is quite long, it goes on about her life and the inspiration and motivations behind running and so on.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah. It's a bit of a, you know, bit of a backstory to her running. And she explained that instead of signing up for the race, she simply asked the security guard for the exact locations it started and ended and started running. It's just like, just pirated the race. So after posting, many people ended up taking to the comments, of course, to explain that despite Curtis's positive intentions, they were upset that she didn't run the race by following the rules and signing up. One commenter wrote, a bit unfair on the others who have paid for the police support, road closures and first aiders, etc. Curtis responded to this comment writing that life's not fair.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I think when she first posted all this, I think she genuinely didn't know that what she was doing was a bit of a faux pas, you know, in the running world. Yeah. I really think because there are, I've heard about whole clubs, particularly in America, that will, I can't remember the name, but there's a club in New York that will every year bandit the Brooklyn Half, actually, I think, by printing race numbers. So, and that's like a concerted effort to steal. Not steal, like to bandit races. I think
it almost is, yeah.
Yeah, I think this Alexa didn't realise that what she was doing would upset so many people. I think it was a bit naive. So she eventually posted on X again to specifically address these negative comments, and she says, "Hi everyone, I didn't realise I would offend so many people. The post was meant to be inspirational and I had no intention to take anything from anyone or the race. I was running for myself, for my mental health." She said, "In the future, I'll be sure to look up the rules if I decide to run again." And her post was very long about sort of mental health things and things like that. So, of course, this whole story has sparked a load of debates and articles about banditing races and why it's wrong. And as usual, you have the comment sections on Instagram and Facebook that go along with these stories saying, oh, it's so terrible, she's doing support and so on. Interestingly, a lot of trail runners were saying, didn't see it as so much of a big deal. And we're saying there's loads of times they're on a like running and they end up accidentally part of the race, which I guess is a bit different from doing an entire race. But it got me thinking, is it ever okay?
And it's different to closed roads as well.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. I was thinking, it got me thinking, is it ever okay to bandit a race if you're just running the same route and don't take any aid or a medal or anything like that? Because I think that they are two slightly different things, in that if you're sort of banditing a race where you've maybe printed out a number, you're taking aid from aid stations, you get a medal at the end, all that sort of thing, then yeah. But then there's this instance where she just ran the same route at the same time. And of course, part of me is like, well, yeah, because if she needed medical support, then she'd be using those resources. And also, of course, the roads have been she's sort of enjoying the roads being closed and getting that privilege, which is a lot of what your race entry goes towards, is the roads being closed. Yeah. And like I said, I'm assuming places like America and also here, if she was to encounter some sort of medical incident, she's probably covered by their insurance, which you pay towards as part of your race entry, as you know, insurance and things like that. So yeah, I don't know. I think it became a bit of a witch hunt, which I always hate with things like this, because I think she genuinely didn't realise that what she was doing was this massive faux pas in the running world. I think it was quite naively she didn't realise. I don't think she had ill intentions, or she wouldn't post it all about it. So I don't like that aspect of it, but it has got me thinking, you know, like, is it ever okay to bandit a race? I don't know. If it's a trail race, is that okay? I don't know.
Yeah, I think for a trail race, it's possibly different because you haven't got those closed roads. Mm. I mean, if there is just, you know, a trail over up and over this mountain, there are other people running at the same time. Yeah, you know, if you're there as well, it's probably not such a big deal if they haven't got sole access. You know, in a city marathon or a city race like that, the road is closed for that reason, for those people. It is not for anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't agree with that at all.
And I think often with trail races, I think the vibes are different because they're often a bit smaller. So if somebody rocked up to the start line of an ultra or trail race and they were just going to run the whole thing without
don't turn up at the start line. People, if you just like happen to join in and running the same way,
exactly.
That's very different to being on, don't be on the start line.
I think people would notice and they'd think that was a bit odd, and maybe they couldn't stop you from doing that because anyone can run the paths at the same time. But it would be seen as a bit odd. But interestingly, I've seen a couple of times at ultras. So when I did the Vogum last year, there was a lady who was, I spoke about this on the podcast, she was doing an FKT, which unfortunately she didn't get by like a few hours. I think she encountered some issues along the way, but she was attempting an FKT along the Wales Coast Path. And I think she was even there from the very start. She just happened to be doing the Vogum bit when we were doing the Vogum. And I think she was stopping in Penarth as well, or she was originally stopping Barry, but because I think she got talking to people and stuff, I think she decided to carry on to Penarth. So she did pretty much the whole thing. And Reese was like, yeah, help yourself to the aid stations and stuff, like, you know, all of that, because it's obvious she's not just trying to run the race for free. Yeah. You know, and I've seen at a few events where other people have been running and people at the aid stations have been like, yeah, if you want to help yourself, we've got loads, you know. And I think that's different, though, from just turning up to
a different vibe
and turning up and waiting on the start line and starting like everyone else. And it's just a bit.
Yeah, that's a weird dick move.
Yeah.
The very worst thing about this whole thing for me is something you said right at the beginning, where her original post was, I just ran 13.1 miles at 7:43 pace. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
Why do Americans say that? Say what time you finished it.
Say
the total time.
Yeah.
Why are you making people do the 13.1 times table to figure out how fast you ran? I don't understand.
I do find, like, you know me, I'm all about, and she's a runfluencer. Maybe she's just an influencer, I don't know. But I do find following runfluencers on TikTok, it's all about the pace. That's all they post about is pace. What pace?
Imagine that. And the Olympic 100 meter final has been won in an average pace of 23.6 miles an hour.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. This nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Stop it.
Well, this is the way it's going. This is what the young people are. It's all about pace. But yeah, it's a usual thing of, it's kind of a shitty thing to do, but I just hate the whole witch hunts around it. And you'd think this woman had ran with a baby that she then yeeted into a river at the end. You know what I mean? Like, she just grabbed a baby from the crowd and then did one of those, like, tosses, you know, spun it around and chucked it. Because the anger that people are directing towards this woman is so disproportionate to what she's done. Like, yeah, of course, people are like, oh, that's not... I get the comments that are saying that's not fair. We've entered... Like, of course, that's the crux of it. It's not fair. Mm. It's not right. You shouldn't do that. But it's just the witch hunt and the anger and the... Yeah, I just think people go way over the top with these things. Chill out. It's just a race.
Yeah, when I first saw it, I was told about it, and I went to look at her account, and the first thing I saw was this long apology about it. So I thought, oh, well, there you go, it's not actually that funny anymore. It's not, but, you know, if she was doubling down and being a dick about it, then it might be funnier. But the fact is, she apologised and kind of, I think, saw the error of it, which is good.
I think it was just naivety. I think it was just ignorance and, But life's not fair, is it? Life's not fair.
Exactly.
Fuck off.
An amazing, very small story to finish on here is that Strava posted on Twitter a screen cap from a woman who Strava'd giving birth, which is an absolutely legendary thing to do. She did a total of 5 hours 37, no word on pace, average a heart rate of 81, so not that difficult by the sound of it. But when this was done, only 2 kudos, which is a bit of a shame, but probably not a PB.
No.
Just a standard training birth. But just imagine, like, oh, congratulations, mum. Here, we're going to put the baby on your chest. Just one second. Beep. There we go. Right, chuck him on now.
When do you pause as well? When it's out? When it's like, when it cries first time? Like, when do you...
Yeah, just having the forethought to, like... you know, your labour has begun. Okay, just a second. Beep. Right, there we go.
What do I record it as? What workout do I record it as? I couldn't see from the logo. I thought it was a swim.
I think for the baby, maybe. I think indoor workout. Okay, like that. No GPS.
Yeah. Because I've got on my car, so I've got all sorts. I've got like cross-country skiing and everything. So then maybe that might be on there.
Eventually, perhaps Strava will add an option for that in the future.
Yes.
Amazing forethought.
Right, Stuart, what have you got coming up next? Any weird workouts?
Not that weird, no. I've had no email from the Paris Marathon organisers yet. I'll be doing, in theory, the Paris Olympic Marathon in August. I haven't actually had confirmation, but that's probably fine, right?
It's probably not a scam,
Nah, it's probably fine. I have booked flights and Airbnb. And also, as it turns out, my clubmate is going, because she actually also got a place in the 10K. That takes place at 11:30 p.m.
Oh, my God!
So as it turns out, my girlfriend's not going, her boyfriend's not going, so I'm going to Paris with a young Brazilian woman.
Just standard.
That's the dream. So that'll be a lovely romantic trip for me and Giuliano. I'm looking forward to that very much. We've got a lovely little apartment in Paris to spend a couple of nights.
Yeah.
I almost said a couple of nights together, but that's not what I mean.
God, keep digging. I'm not saying anything. I am not saying anything.
No, I think it'll just be lovely. Oh, she's lived there as well. She can sort of show me the good places to go, and she can deal with the rude waiters and things like that. That'd be good.
Yeah.
That'd be handy. I've also got the Bristol Half in 2 weeks' time, and I should be going for PB number 3. It's a big year for me.
Nice.
Oh, actually, with this marathon coming up as well, could also go for a marathon PB. I've only actually ever done one proper marathon, so could be 4 PBs for the year. That's exciting. Mm. There is life in the old dog, maybe. Amy, speaking of old dogs, how are you doing?
Oh, I've got Radder Half next week. I said last time on the podcast that's what I had coming up next, which technically I was, but I didn't realise it was so far away. So yeah, next week is Radder Half. Radder is in the place in Cardiff, not up in Mid Wales. So yes, so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's fairly local, which is nice. Looking forward to it.
Lovely route. I love all of those hills. It's one of those races, when it first came out a few years ago, I looked at the route and thought, yep, that's exactly what I would have done. Mm-hmm. That's ideal. Love that route.
Yeah, so really, really looking forward to that. And the Caerphilly 10K was fantastic. Despite all the mud, it was like excellently organised and great atmosphere. So yeah, I'm looking forward to doing another Ridge Runners race.
I'll try and get some frazzles for you.
Oh, no.
If you've enjoyed this bullshit, you can visit runningsbs.com, see the show notes and the links from the episode and the whole back catalogue, as well as links to our Patreon, our merch store, and our social medias. Goodbye.
There's an anomaly